council meeting from January 22nd. Everyone stand in the pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Remain standing.
Dear Lord, bless the decisions of this body, guide us tonight and in the future as well. Amen.
Can we have roll call?
Scott Brown.
Here.
Jim Westfall.
Here.
Wayne Shepherd. Brian Rowe.
Here.
Dan Revelle.
Here.
Shirley Rose.
Here.
Tim Salters.
Here.
Terry Oakham.
Here. Adoption of the agenda.
Motion to approve the agenda.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to adopt the agenda as presented.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Jim Westfall.
Yes.
Wayne Shepherd. Brian Rowe.
Yes.
Dan Revelle.
Yes.
Shirley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
And by a vote of 6-0, those are approved. First, approval of minutes for January 8th.
Motion to approve the minutes from January 8th meeting.
Second. Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to approve the minutes as presented.
Scott Brown.
Yes.
Jim Westfall.
Yes.
Brian Rowe.
Yes.
Dan Revelle.
Yes.
Shirley Rose.
Yes.
Tim Salters.
Yes.
And by a vote of 6-0, those are approved. Petitions, memorials, remonstrances. Being none, how about committee chair reports? Report of city officers. Real quick, fire chief couldn't be here. He had another appointment at Board of Works this evening. He made promotions in the fire department. Captain Safety Officer Brett Bowe was promoted to battalion chief. And first class firefighter Chad Winkler was promoted to safety officer. And in the past, we've had an assistant fire chief. We haven't had one for a while, but under my appointment, I have appointed Dave Lancaster as the assistant chief. And he will be on a shift. This is a regular guy, so that will not be a daytime position. Also, I want to again thank Father Dave and St. Francis Xavier Parish for allowing us to use these facilities. We will be here maybe end of July. It's while we're doing our ADA updates at City Hall. So until further notice, meetings will be held here. Okay, no old business, new business. First up is Shot North America, tax abatement petition on new manufacturing equipment. And that's correct.
I'm here on behalf of Shot North America, and I have two of my clients here, Trent Johnson and Tim Tiger. And we filed with the county assessor and the county auditor three statement of benefits and three petitions for tax abatement for new manufacturing equipment. And they've also been filed with Sharon Duke, the clerk treasurer. And although it's not required by the DLGF, we are doing this in two steps so that the public has a chance to get to know what Shot North America is up to. We have three petitions in front of you, and we're asking for the first reading tonight, and then we'll publish for a public hearing, and then a second and third reading on February 12th. Again, that's not required, but I did contact Shirley Rose, and we did feel like we should do that in the interest of the public, and we'd also like them to know what Shot's new product lines are going to be. There are three petitions in front of you. One is to add auto loaders for a product line, which Trent can talk to you about, robotic loaders. Another one is to upgrade the R13 furnace. And another one, which is the really cool one, is for a clear trans product line, which is a new cooktop that kind of gives a 3D dimensional effect. 3D dimensional effect. I just saw it today, and you can put Wi-Fi to it and pull up your recipes on the cooktop. It's a really advanced design. So in terms of, I'll let them talk about that, but in terms of the statutory requirements, we filed our statement of benefits with the assessor, the auditor, and the clerk, as well as the petitions. And then once we get through first reading tonight, then we will file our notice of public hearing to be held before the February 12th meeting, and then ask for your approval of the three petitions and the three tax abatements. Another thing to note is that we're now under the new revisions to the statute since the last time it was in front of you, which was for a shot tax abatement with Tim Kiger a couple years ago. And we now are told by statute to put our required schedule in the resolution, so you'll see a new section in the resolutions now, and it's also on the second page of the statement of benefits. In terms of how the depreciation will go inside of SHOT North America, the schedule that Trent Johnson has picked for the schedule of deductions is a five-year schedule of deduction. If you recall, it used to be statutorily defined as 10 years, but now it is 5 years for this particular one. We can ask for 10 or go to up to 20 with special statutory requirements, but in this case, we're going to ask for a five-year deduction, stepping down in equal increments with a 100% deduction on the first year, 80, 60, 40, 20, and then zero in the sixth year. So if there are no questions about the legal requirements as they stand now, I would turn the floor over to Trent Johnson or Tim Kiger if you have any questions regarding the actual projects. And for those of you who don't know, this is Trent Johnson, the controller from SHOT North America.
Are there three resolutions here?
Yes.
Are there two, three, and four?
Yes. Two is the auto loader, three is the furnace upgrade, and four is Clear Trans.
Motion to read the resolution.
Second.
Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westfall to read resolutions 2, 3, and 4, 2018.
Resolution 2, 2018, a resolution approving the tax abatement of new manufacturing equipment for SHOT North America Camp for auto loader containing sections 1 through 5. Resolution number 3-2018, resolution approving tax abatement of new manufacturing equipment for SHOT North America Incorporated for an R-13 furnace upgrade containing sections 1 through 5. Resolution 4-2018, resolution approving tax abatement of new manufacturing equipment for SHOT North America Incorporated for Clear Trans product line sections 1 through 5.
Discussion.
Okay, so you want to kind of describe the projects. All right, so the first project, the auto load project, is basically going to put robotics in place to allow us to get away from having to hand load product into the furnaces, which is manual intensive, less safe, also creates more opportunity for quality issues with the glass. I don't know how much you guys know about ceramization of glass, but any contamination on that glass when it goes through the furnace will basically destroy the glass and it will be unusable. Smallest thing, hair, fibers, things like that. We do a lot of work to try to keep things like that out. But keeping the hands away from it as much as we can, it helps that process. Okay. Now, basically we have six operators that are doing this course right now manually. This would basically pull us down to three in this process, but the three operators would not be displaced as far as the job. They would just move into other jobs within the same facility. So no displacement of people. Okay. The second one, if you have no questions on that? It's your report. Okay. All right. Second one is basically a Clear Trans product, which is the one that's actually going to create some jobs for us. What it is, it's a new product. It's a clear type glass that allows you to put a backside coating on the glass and creates a 3D effect when you're looking down on it from a cooktop. If any of you have a Saran type cooktop, a black glass cooktop, they're pretty much all black, right? Or white, if you happen to have a white one already fired. This will allow you to have multiple variations of colors
It really creates a really, really cool effect, but it also allows you to put control panels with multi-colored displays underneath of that. It'll be Wi-Fi effective, depending on who the customer is and what they want to do with it. You know, so you, now you see refrigerators with all the smart technology where you can get to store and look in your refrigerator. You almost get to this point with the hubs, where you'll be able to sit there and look at it from a Wi-Fi type thing. But from our perspective, what we really like is the aesthetic appearance of the glass. When you put it with the cooktop, it really makes it pop. So we're hoping that this will create a new demand for the product, and do something new out there. We've seen the black cooktops for a long, long time. Saran just, we just had our 25th anniversary just about a year ago. So these have been around a while. So it's time for something new to kind of get everybody excited again, and that's kind of what we're trying to do with this. So initially, when we first start, it'll be a couple of jobs. Then once we kind of get this ramped up, it'll be four jobs, and then we'll just see how the business goes from there. Okay?
So this process is still in the R&D phase, is that correct?
Yes. And then the third one was R13 furnace control, furnace upgrade. And basically what this is allowing us to do is speed our furnace up. So right now the glass goes through our furnace at about 550 millimeters per minute. What this will do is take it up to about 700 millimeters per minute. That's about a 37% increase in throughput. Really, really helps us out in terms of basically efficiency. Also allows us to not have to run an older furnace that we've got sitting there, so the people that are on that will utilize over on the R13, because if you speed it up, it also creates more work that you have to do as far as the unloading and things, because you're pushing the people a little bit faster. Okay, so you've also got to offset that a little bit. But also that's part of the reason we have to go to the auto loading too, because we are going a bit quicker on that furnace. Okay? And what these do is our competitors are out there continuously pushing us, trying to come up with better ways, new ways, reducing prices, reducing their costs, those kind of things. And that's what we're trying to push back, and we're trying to figure out ways to stay competitive with them. That's what all these projects do. Clear Trans obviously brings new jobs to the industry, new jobs to Vincennes. That's the one we're really excited about. Okay, any questions?
The second resolution was, you said created jobs?
Yes, Clear Trans, the Clear Trans project.
Okay.
Yes.
How many jobs left there?
Initially, it'll create two, and then eventually it'll ramp up to four, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
And this, the new talks you showed, that was at the 25th anniversary.
I think we did.
Yeah, we did
show those when you were there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I showed some of them to Yvette today, and she wanted one to take home.
I have to win the
lotto. And Brian, I know you asked if it was in R&D. This product is made and manufactured and sold a lot in Europe, but we're just starting to introduce it in the U.S. So the product itself is developed and manufactured in Europe, but we're planning on manufacturing it here in the U.S. As well. So it's, the product is there and developed. We just have to get the equipment and space in the facility set up to start manufacturing it. So.
Now, obviously, when you talk about improvements in technology, the main concern for us, obviously, would be when you improve efficiency, sometimes it means loss of jobs. But you guys' commitment to keep jobs here and increase jobs here is always a welcome sign. We do appreciate that.
We really appreciate our employees, and it takes a long time to get good employees to do what we do. So we're going to let them go once we get them in the house. We find work there.
What's your total employment now?
Total employment plant right now is about 385 employees.
No discussion.
Did you want the total numbers in terms of the three projects? I think that the Clear Trans, in terms of the cost, would be $450,000.
Auto load is $99,000.
And then the furnace upgrade, I think, was $386.
$486.
Any other comments, questions?
Call for questions.
Dan Revlin?
Yes.
Shirley Rose?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Rodney Rowe?
Yes.
Okay, those three resolutions passed by a vote of 6-0. And now the next step is there'll be a public hearing next council meeting.
I'll advertise it for 6:00 on the 12th, is that right, Dave? 6:00.
Second Monday.
Second Monday, that's the 12th, okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next is.
It is a touch screen, it is, the one I hold in.
Next is the interlocal agreement between the county and the city for the Pantheon project. I think you've all received this for review. Open for discussion and do we need to read this?
This is still just a draft between the various. I haven't heard from the attorney.
I've been busy working for Mr. Tiger and Mr. Thomas today.
So this is the proposal that I started in the county council's lawyer. Made some changes and we've had a couple of meetings on it, so this is just up for discussion. Take one from column A, one from column B, start over.
I kind of, what I like is the mayor have an appointment, city council has an appointment, county council has an appointment, county commissioners have an appointment, and then a representative from InVen, they have an appointment. But to me, that's the cleanest way to do it. All those parties have been involved in this process really from the beginning. In my opinion, I think that's the direction we should go into.
I think I would kind of second that thought that Councilman Brown has. Most of this is pretty good. I mean, most of the work's here, and there's a lot of stuff that we can agree on. There's nothing really that's going to trip us up here. That one big question was that fifth rotating member. I think a lot of us had questions with where it went from the council to the county council, the county commissioners, the mayor, and then an in-bin person. And with, you know, a lot of the funding coming, the backbone of the funding coming from, you know, our RDC and then our clerk treasurer being kind of a financial focal point for it. Like my opinion was that group, person, individual, whoever appointed that needed to be somebody that was rooted here in the city because the city is going to take a lot of the risk. You know, they would get a lot of rewards if this does work out. But financially, that's in the middle of our downtown. That's really prominent and important to us. So if it was an appointment from InVen, that would be something because they've done a lot of lead work anyway, and they're committed to the downtown just as much as we are. So I would have no issue with that, but I do feel like that fifth appointment needs to be somebody or an entity from Vincent's area.
Which would be in me.
Right, which would be in me.
Right.
I like the fact, too, that it's going to be on a cycle basis every term. A different entity would be appointing a fifth member.
I'd rather see it not the rotating.
Yeah, not the rotating one.
Just keep it as the in-bin.
You take out B, there's no reason. That rotation might be down the road, might be a problem. The fifth member is a tiebreaker, so we don't want to get in a situation where.
Right.
This year the city has control, next year the county has control.
That takes away the independence of the fabric and the railroad.
All of a sudden you're going,
it's a unique situation.
We'll just wait and rule on this next month because the city is,
appointments not running up.
I think InVen, they've been pushing this, and they just need to be actively at the table. Like I said, they've been pushing it, and I think they're going to bring a lot to the table, so to me, they should be the fifth member.
And not just that, I mean, they were there for the initial vision, and to see that through, that's really important. When you see the vision, to kind of finish that through instead of somebody else coming in and doing that, and I feel that's kind of an important thing as well.
Yeah, they've been the driving force behind this, so I think that's very important that they do have a strong, permanent representation.
And then we need to, this also lists the clerk treasurer, the city of Vincennes. That's the one that receives and accounts for and disperses the monies, is that?
That was my idea, I didn't talk to her about it. Somebody has to be a fiscal officer, you have two entities putting money into it, and somebody has to be the person who's responsible to be for accounts, writing checks, making claims.
Would it be a bad idea, it's the clerk treasurer, and then
who's supposed to help you out?
Somebody from the auditor's office.
Auditor's office, would it be a bad idea to have those two as like non-voting members that are at those meetings as well? I mean, because they'd have the financial information.
Right, I would think that would be.
They would definitely want to be.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, I think that would be pretty important. I mean, like I said, I mean, pretty much this is really good. I think there's just a couple areas that we would like to see improved, and I think it's a done deal after that.
So what are you saying, so for the clerk treasurer and the auditor to be at the meetings as non-voting members?
Yeah, I'm not sure that they always both have to be there.
At least one of them has to be there. It would be a good idea.
There would be clerk to be clerk treasurer. By statute, the clerk treasurer is the clerk to the city council, and this is kind of a shadow of that, where somebody would take notes and keep notes. All those meetings would be open to the public. Yes.
I have a question. I'm going to go get excited here. In section 7, talks about duration and termination. What if this doesn't work, David? And it says we shall follow Indiana Code 36.111. What would that entail?
That would just be the state law on how you would declare a real estate surplus to the county and the city and dispose of it, donating it to another eligible entity. Since this would be funded with tax, you're getting it for free, and then investing tax money, and it would be like any other city or county property for disbursement. I think that's what they're referring to here. But you couldn't run it for a couple of years and then sell it without going through the state requirements of how you would dispose of it.
Any questions on this? Then I also want to mention that under this, all the visitors funding. And I've met with accountants, and we're looking at our city's funding coming through RDC, as well as looking at edit dollars that are available to come up with our portion of the money to cover this. So I'd like to keep up to date on that as we move on. Okay.
Subject to your input, I'll make a couple of changes and send it down to the county commissioner to look at it, county council can look at it. And look at it to make sure it's captured everything you want to change.
Send it down the hall.
It's another building.
I'm that's in the castle.
Keep all our old stuff over there.
Precious. First rule of old, never anyone quit me.
Has anybody got anything else on this? If not, we will move on to Brett Dawson.
I've asked Brett, one of our local tech experts, to come talk about possible Wi-Fi placement in our city parks, downtown, Riverwalk area, charging stations. He's got some background knowledge on these areas. And hopefully we'll have different people come over the next couple of council meetings to kind of give us some more information, see if this is a possibility for us. So he's going to talk specifically about how we would do Wi-Fi in those kind of public areas and different types of charging stations in public spots. So, Brett?
Yeah, like Tim, he's asked me to go over a couple things, you guys, and said you would probably have questions. That would probably be easier for you to answer instead of just rambling on about stuff. The Wi-Fi in the areas, he said the parks, public, maybe downtown, Riverwalk area. It is possible other cities are doing this. It's more common in bigger cities. New York is probably the model for it all. They kind of do everything first. Basically, you're looking at putting it, developing in outdoor access points. They send out large radius of wireless waves, just like your indoor home router would do, except it's meant for outdoor large areas, even like warehouses. This would cover the average access point. One can hold 256 clients connected at one time. That is the average. You can go larger, the more people you would want to add, price would go up in equipment cost. But that's the average, 256 people. With that being said, I don't know who the city has internet through, whether Department of New Wave, MetroNet, either one of them perfectly capable of supplying the internet speeds to go that you would need in each location for these access points. There would be, cost-wise, I just looked up a couple, just equipment costs, just to give you guys an idea. Each access point runs generally $500, $600. And that's, like I said, those are outdoor access points, industrial, weatherproof, hold 256 people. They can have 16, let's see how I explain this, administrator accounts, I guess is what you'd call it. So you'd have your public one where just your average person is in the park, wants to connect, check their emails. Then you can lock them out for maintenance-wise. Like your administrators can lock in, they can change settings, they can update the firmwares, just signal strengths, maintenance-wise, like that. You have up to 16 different accounts for certain things. So you can grant permissions to certain people, certain groups that may need it through, like Greg Park, if the pool wants to use it. You can make a whole separate pool account for people just there to connect to, as opposed to the people that are in the park to connect to it. So you can kind of divide up the areas on one access point. Any questions you might have on those?
What kind of cost are we looking at from the 256 to
the 256?
No, I'm not talking about I'm not talking about the equipment cost. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the monthly fee.
The monthly fee would be based on your internet service provider. You'd have to talk to whether it be MetroNet or New Wave. I'm assuming you guys know who you use both.
Yeah,
we've got
MetroNet. Okay. Yeah. And you just have to talk to their sales people.
Do you have a ballpark on figure on that?
I have no idea because you guys already have accounts with them since it's a large account. They may throw a deal. I mean, it's completely different for you guys because you have multiple buildings, multiple places that are probably using the MetroNet service.
How big of an area would one of these cover?
They would cover.
Are you familiar with Greg Park?
Yeah.
Would one
would cover Greg Park. Park, yeah. Okay. One would cover Greg Park.
So there may have to be like two if it was on a river.
Right.
Wall.
The downtown, I would say two, just because you're going length and not, you know, a radius. You'd probably point one each direction, maybe go in the middle, or you could kind of adjust them And that would be, I don't know, the Riverwalk. I don't know how long the Riverwalk is.
Half a mile.
Half a mile. One actually probably cover maybe that one, maybe two. But there's tools that you can use to test signal strength, so you don't just make a random guess, like, you know, buy more equipment than needed. But there are tools where you can test that out. But yeah, Greg Park one would be sufficient for it. Same with, you know, Lester Square. But like I said, downtown's the only one I was thinking you'd probably need two, because just since you're going lengthwise, I'd angle them opposite each other just to make sure it's covered.
So do they just go on telephone poles? Or
you can put them anywhere. Anywhere you would want. You have to have power, obviously, somewhere with power. I would stay away from poles, because most of the time you have to lease spots on poles. So buildings, okay, Greg Park has buildings. You could put up your own, maybe, radio tower that you see on homes. I've actually done some internet stuff for farmers that we put up an access point up. They just go out and they find a 40-foot radio tower. They put an access point at the top of it, and now their combines have Wi-Fi while they're working.
We've got lights in most of them. Facilities, so those
yeah, that would be good. You could put, like, Greg Park, that shelter, one.
The closed shelter house kind of in the middle.
Yeah, the one right in the middle, that'd probably be a good spot. You probably have power there already. It wouldn't be difficult to get, you know, internet line to if needed. And it's centralized. Centralized usually the best, anytime you're talking about wireless. The middle is always the best place, because then you don't have to worry about one end not being stronger than the other.
What about longevity of these devices?
The outdoor access points, they'll still be working. The technology speeds will pass up the life of the device. So what you get, they'll work. You're probably looking 10, 15 years easily. That's a long time for electronics.
But nobody would access them because they're too slow.
Right. Right. You'll be like, you'll say, I want, you know, I don't want that 100 megabyte download speed. I want the gigabyte now. So, yeah, it's like I said, the equipment will be good. It's what people demand would want. The speeds will increase before the equipment goes bad. But yeah, the equipment is very durable. They're made for outdoors and industrial business type places that can take a lot of beating.
The charging stations, you're just...
The charging stations, you can do a couple different things. You put them in park benches. New York City, that's how they do theirs, down in Central Park. They pretty much just made them. They put outdoor outlets with USB stations on the armrest. Pretty cheap solution. And they put them on the park benches. Or you can do locker-based. You can do free lockers, or you can charge them, say, at the pool. You put a kiosk, put some has advertisement board on it, and you can also charge, I don't know, $3 for the day. You can have your own locker, you can charge your phone, they're big enough to put maybe a small bag and money in as well. And at the end of the day, you can set them up on timers. It will reset the person's individual codes. They're all electronic. You type in, you know, so you've seen them, Holiday World like type lockers. Same way, maybe at the skate park, you charge out there, those guys who would throw them in, you know. You don't have to worry about sitting on a bench and some kid swiping their phone while they're sitting there. They can lock them up while they're skating. Like I said, you can charge for the day. They're very customized, those lockers that I looked up. You can do hourly charges. You can do, like, charge them by the hour and then it cuts off. You can charge them by the day. But they always, you can use cards, cash, quarters, you can use all that. So that's why you can generate, maybe pay for the lockers themselves. Or you can do free ones. So you want to be nice people and put up lockers and say, you know what, we'll front all this money because our great citizens here deserve it. And but you can do them free too. And they're the same way, the free ones in the kiosk style. They set up their own code and they have a backdoor key. So if somebody doesn't clear the code, park guy can come around in the morning, unlock it, clear it out, set it up. People are good to go for that day. So it's not like they can set it and keep them forever. You can wipe out the codes.
How much are lockers?
It depends on the company you go with. They range all over the place. I looked up some American-made people. See, an 8-bay kiosk locker was $2,500, and that was with the, I couldn't find one without, and I didn't call them, I was just looking at their website. That was with a video display on top for advertisements. It's almost like, it almost looked to me like a PowerPoint type display where businesses could put their ad up there as well. And then that was the most expensive. And then they went cheaper than that. You can do, they have all kinds of stuff. Charging tables, they have charging benches, charging solar powered chargers on wheels. And there's just a wide range of stuff you can do and make out there.
Key thing would just be availability and power to those.
Right, guys. Right, yeah. I wouldn't suggest a solar power, honestly. Because the more people you get, the more people, you know, it's going to draw that power. If it happens to be sitting in a shaded area, it's not going to generate enough power. I would definitely, I mean, you could if you wanted to, but I would prefer it personally if it was just hardwired straight into electric. Like I said, the ones that you charge on, I think there is places you can pay for the locker themselves, like Rainbow Beach. High traffic areas where the people are paying to get in and there all day, the parents, the kids, they can lock their phones up. They would pay the money to not worry about it getting stolen while they're swimming or skating. Okay.
If this is something that we're going to do, your recommendation would probably be start off and try it out, like going back to the Wi-Fi, try it out once.
Right, the Wi-Fi. Sure, yeah, the Wi-Fi. I'd pick a spot. Like he said, Greg Park would probably be a good spot to test it. See how it works out. The concern I would have downtown is businesses leeching off your free Wi-Fi to do business operations. You can monitor that, and I personally would just say, if you get caught, we're going to fine you. Because it also comes into the point where you would get, your internet service providers don't generally like that. They cut you a deal, and you supply other businesses with free internet. You're kind of dipping into their pockets a little bit. So you're going to take the precautions in that area just to make sure people aren't stealing services. But the park, I don't think you'd have any problems. The park closes, so you could even put it on a timer. So when the park's closed, it'd turn off, and it'd reboot back up when the park's opened up again to the public. That way you can't have people, maybe some of the neighborhoods that might be able to get a little bit of signal across the street using it, you know, through the night, playing video games on and all that, using high bandwidth stuff in the evenings. That's what I would do. I would put it on a timer just so it shuts off when the park's closed because nobody's supposed to be there anyways, and then it'd kick back on when it's supposed to be opened back up.
No real way to control the path of this Wi-Fi though, is there? I mean, it's
you can do, yes, you can do sector antennas where you, and they range 90 degree, 100 degree to 360, or you can even narrow them down to make them very directional. Most places don't go the directional route just because they're looking for that 360 coverage. And if you start to shrink the signal strength, are you thinking maybe downtown or where?
Well, I was thinking more like the Riverwalk area and downtown. If that's a 360, a lot of residents are going to
right.
Free
you
Wi-Fi.
Could do now for that case. I would do. I'd probably look at a sector degree antenna, kind of point it so it's hitting around that walk, and then. There might get a little bit of overfeed into the house, but it's not going to be a substantial strength where they could do a whole lot with.
Is there a way to monitor that and see where those people are using it? And if it's continuous, can you shut them off?
You could, yes. If you could pinpoint a house, say there's a specific house and their IP address, you can block the IPs. So they can't have access to it. So yeah, if you could pinpoint who it was, you can turn them down off.
And can you limit the bandwidth?
You can adjust the bandwidth, yes. You could send out the strength full bandwidth wise, whatever you're buying from your provider, or you can, like I said, it has the 16 accounts. You can set up the whichever group you want to have what percentage of the bandwidth. So if you want your public to have 50% of that, but if an administrator logs in to do maintenance work, you could pull 75% of that into them and it would drop the public down to 25. So you can play with the settings as far as how much percentage of bandwidth is going to what group.
And can you limit access to the sites?
You can limit access to the sites. There's third-party apps, and a lot of the routers manufacturers are starting, access point manufacturers are starting to incorporate their own security, parental control, I guess is what it's called. As far as also the log-on page, when you connect to the Wi-Fi, pulls up a disclaimer telling your terms and agreement, the user, all that. Some places do it, some don't. I would say ask your lawyer. McDonald's does not do it. We'll just use them as a chance. They don't have it. Good Samaritan Hospital does have it. They just want you to know that this is what it's used for. Not allowed to use, old sites. Watch what you're getting on. You're not allowed to stream Netflix because it pulls a great amount, at the hospital. So, I would say consult the lawyer what you want to do. The terms and agreements would be more so just to cover you, let people know it's not as secure. You are using public. There could be 200 other people online with you. It's at your own risk. I wouldn't really suggest looking up your banking accounts on it because someone might be watching you. It wouldn't be a bad idea to do something like that, though.
Have you done any of these anywhere?
The wireless access points, like for public access points, I have not. I've done private ones for private, either an individual, like I said, the farmers. I've done a lot more so in rural areas because they're jumping on board with all this wireless internet service type stuff because of their tractors. I think they have GPS and updates, and I think they drive themselves is what it looks.
So you've got this public Wi-Fi, and you've got houses around there, it's not going to interfere with their Wi-Fi, is it?
No, you would have to log in, just like anything else, on your smartphone, you go in, Wi-Fi, you have to pick, Greg Park. You'd have to actually go click on it to log in, and you can also set them up to refresh those accounts. So it can hold 256 people. At the end of the day, you can set it up to wipe everybody. So it can't save it. That person can't consistently, use the same IP all the time. You can wipe it out so a new group can come in when they're there instead of, you know, somebody was there yesterday, they're going home, well, they're still registered in the access point as having this address, but you can set that to refresh hourly, daily, all that. But yeah, as far as the homes using it,
I didn't mean the homes using it. I meant the homes, it wouldn't interfere.
Interfere with their signals?
Right.
It would not interfere with their signal. It would run off a 2.5 gigahertz or a 5 gigahertz public band. It has like noise control, so there's not really a whole lot of interference going on as far as home routers and the public access points.
That's unsecured. Like Greg Park would be unsecured.
All public places are, unless you want to hand out passwords, and you know, they'd call you up and ask for a password if you want to do that. But yeah, it's all unsecured. All public is unsecured. That means they can just pick it up, you know, push on, connect to Greg Park. They see their terms and agreements. You know, here's what you're doing at your own risk. Then they're connected. They don't have to enter any passwords. It's all public, non-secure. All non-secure means is there's multiple people that you may not know and or may not be good people on the same network as you.
Okay, move on to resolution 5-2018, encumbrances for the 2017 budget.
Motion to read resolution 5-2018.
Second.
Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westphal to read and approve resolution 5-2018.
Resolution 5-2018, the resolution of the Common Council of the City of Vincennes encumbering funds for Vincennes Animal Shelter Engineers Office and Police Department from last year's budget.
Discussion. Basically, this is just bills that were turned in at the end of the year, or they got after the last meeting or had it. So it's just encumbering money from last year to pay them because they were last year's bills.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Ryan Grove?
Yes.
Dan Rappelett?
Yes.
Shirley Rose?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Jim Westphal?
Yes.
And resolution 5-2018 passed by vote 6-0. Next is claims.
Motion to approve the claims. The amount of $243,293.55.
Second.
Motion by President Brown, second by Vice President Westphal to approve the claims in amount of $243,293.55. Discussion.
I have some questions, please. Since I found my picture there. It says here in this resolution that we encumbered $3,918.56 plus $618.59. For the animal shelter, okay? Then in here, we are paying some bills for them. And y'all got a copy of all these invoices that was due from the animal shelter to the Southgate veterinarians. So it looks to me like, and maybe wrong, but it seems to me like we're paying some bills this year that should have been paid last in 17 for the shelter.
Animal shelter.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's something that got set up with Southgate. But I can tell you that I will be discussing this with Laura.
Well, it's quite a bit of money there that we're talking about. Now, the dates on this go back
to August.
Yeah. And this is not anything against Laura, because I think she's doing a great job. She's doing a great job out there. But I do have some concerns that if there's a problem with her budget, that maybe we need to look at it.
I will tell you that I wasn't aware of this until this just all come up, and it is being addressed.
Okay. Because I think this
is really important. And it isn't a problem with her budget.
I think it's really important.
Yeah, so, and had I known this was going to be tonight, this question, I'd have her front and center.
Well, I just looked at it.
Any other discussion on claims?
Question.
Or not pay it.
Scott Brown?
Yes.
Brian Grove?
Yes.
Dan Ravalette?
Yes.
Tim Salters?
Yes.
Sherman Rose?
Yes.
Jim Westfall?
Yes.
And by a vote of 6-0, the claims are paid. Anything under miscellaneous? If not, just need a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
We are adjourned.